her bathroom?
You didn't see that.
Oh, yeah, it's bad.
I only saw the pictures of her face.
No, I guess Bobby Brown's sister or something was taking pictures because they're all worried about her. And it's just all crack pipes and, you know, like burned spoons.
Behold my surprise.
Beer cans, yeah.
Yeah, that bathroom needs a total makeover.
Queer Eye for the crack hope. Yeah, see, if I was a morning show, that'd get big laughs. That's laughs, L-A-F-F-S, by the way. It's like a Queer Eye for the, blah, blah, blah. And then you crack whore equals funny. That's a phrase that does equal amusing. All right, hey, you out there, here's what's coming up. Coming up later on today, we're going to be giving away some Winterhawks tickets, by the way. They're going to be playing the... Is that right? Am I making that up?
I thought you had some other stuff to give away, too.
Well, I do. Do I also have Winterhawks tickets? Am I high?
I don't believe so.
Really, no one knows. I do have Oh, here we go. What I'm talking about right here. Yes, Winterhawks playoff tickets. It's the playoff game. Okay, because it's two games against Seattle. Playoff game against Seattle on Friday, March 31st, 7 p.m. So we do have Winterhawks tickets. We're going to be giving out later on. We've also got tickets to the Faux Film Festival. That opens tonight, by the way, at the Hollywood Theater. Hollywood Theater was a fantastic place to see what the British would call a film. And we're going to have Mike Skolnick from the Faux Film Festival. He's going to be joining us.
That's next to the diner where we filmed one day, wasn't it?
It is across from the Hollywood Burger Bar. Is it bar or barn? I think it's bar. It is across from the Hollywood Burger Bar, which is where large segments of fast-paced, thrill-a-minute, award-winning Rick Emerson, Joni DeRoshi short film Remote Control was filmed.
And where Clyde kept fluffing his lines so he could eat the entire pie.
Clyde... I'm glad you said that, by the way. That's like that thing
That's what everybody was saying. He's doing that on purpose so he can have another piece of pie.
That's that thing about urging Alabamans to go eat tainted candy. I'm so glad that you say this because now I can comment on it. It is true. By the way, I should tell you, it's the Rick Emerson Show. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. We're getting more email, by the way, about this... The soundbite that no one seems to be able to understand. I'm just saying. So we'll get to that. But yes, very briefly to discuss this. We did film, again, we did this, not a plug, but we did this movie Remote Control. And there was a sequence that took place in a diner. And it was the Hollywood Burger Bar, which is right across from the Hollywood Theater. And it was me and Joni and Nate and, Clyde, Emily Cast of Thousands. You were there.
I was there.
Because you were...
Second assistant director, which you will find on IMDb.
Really? Do you actually have an internet movie database?
I am Tim Riley 4, I believe.
Are there three other Tim Rileys in
the
film?
Yeah, before me, going back to, like, the 1920s, yeah.
Well, okay.
So I do have a little bit of credit on there.
So anyway, we shot this scene at the Hollywood Burger Bar, and it was a scene, it takes place in a diner, and Clyde played, wait for this, gruff diner patron who loves pie. And we bought, like, this big, like, the biggest apple pie you've ever seen in
the
your life.
The biggest Costco makes.
It was...
That should give you a hint.
It was like
we didn't get it at a regular store, we got it at Costco.
It was like from that cash and carry place. It's like a 40-pound pie. It's like half of Yakima's yearly output. So Clyde has not a small part, but not a great deal. His line is to sort of glower and look menacing. And he has this line, you can see this in the movie, and it says in the script, by the way, this was the problem, is that in the script, Joni and I put, his name was Henry, and you know, sometimes there'll be notes like, you know, like it says, with, gruffly, or with anger, or shouts at top of lungs. He's actually said, around a mouthful of pie. And so the line, it was Henry says, and then in parentheses, around a mouthful of pie. The line was, freaks and geeks, because they're listing television shows at a certain point. But of course, he's freaking geeks. And so he says it around a mouthful of pie, and it's like the line kept getting delivered worse and worse and worse, and the pie kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller, and Clyde kept getting larger and larger and larger, and it seriously took him like 80 takes. And sometimes you'll hear actors say, yeah, I had to do this terrible scene where, God, I had to eat a pound of bacon, and it's like I kept, the light wasn't right.
It was cold and they made it hours ago, but this was a fresh pie.
Yeah. And you'll hear actors complain, though. The actors like, well, I had to do this take where I had to eat a pie, and it's like I...
It was like the pie was supposed to be in craft services.
We had to do 30 takes, and by the end of it, I was just so disgusted, and I didn't want to eat any more pie. And like Ed Norton tells this great story about Rounders, where he... now totally just talking to film dorks here. But those are my people. Where Ed Norton and Matt Damon are outside, and because Ed Norton's character Worm is inside skinning Roman and Maurice. He's cheating them at poker. And he's outside eating off a hot dog cart on the streets of New York, and he's eating one of those hot dogs. And Ed Norton talks about how, like, it was the worst idea ever because he blew the scene time after time, and he had to eat, like, 40 hot dogs. Clyde had no such problems. With Clyde, it was just like, and then he would say the line, and then he would, like, muff the next line somehow. We would have to stop, reset everything, so Clyde could eat more pie.
And it's like 2 in the morning and everyone's falling asleep, except for Clyde, who's up eating pie.
Except for Clyde, who's a pie-eating machine at that point. So if slash when you ever see a remote control, when Clyde says that line and it comes out as Freaks and Geeks, it really does come out like Buffalo Bill style, realize that's like take 150.
And now you know the rest of the story.
Thank you so much. All right, we're going to get all this email to get to. And I do have this news pile. And normally we reserve it for Fridays. But I'm going to get to it today because it's just, A, we've waited too long. B, the pile's getting too big. C, the pile contains the word fetuses, cows, and Star Jones. And I think there's a thing about buggery in there somewhere.
Why not?
We're going to get to that. Plus, we will have Mike Skolnick from the Faux Film Festival, plus the top five, plus the worst song ever. It doesn't seem possible, does it? It doesn't even seem like it could be executed flawlessly and with much vigor, and yet...
we're going to do it.
That's what we do, ladies and gentlemen, at the City Desk, your personal savior, Tim Riley.
From high atop the bottom of the coin tower in downtown Portland, Oregon, CBS presents the City Desk Newsbeat, Tim Riley reporting.
It's the loudest music I've ever heard.
It is.
All right.
Sorry, I had my headphones turned down.
That's okay. I can shout louder.
Former media mogul Ted Turner has turned the spotlight to President Bush while receiving the Delta Airlines Prize for Global Understanding in Atlanta yesterday.
I don't even understand what that award is for. The Delta Airlines Award for Global Understanding?
Yeah.
Is that just like when you can pick the Earth out of a lineup?
I guess they have their own award show.
Yeah, whatever.
Why not? The CNN founder blasted the president during his acceptance speech for possibly falling off the wagon.
And this guy's got the nuclear trigger under his finger, too. Reformed alcoholic, but nothing wrong with that. Might decide to get drunk again. You know, sometimes they do slip.
Jesus. You know, Ted Turner can say, if I said that, you'd find my head in a bag tomorrow.
Yeah.
It would. You find that, like, the next time you saw me, they'd be zipping me up in the morgue.
Ted Turner said President Bush has made enemies everywhere.
I also believe, and George Bush is a perfect example of this.
Is he doing stand-up?
You can go around and make enemies everywhere, too, if that's what you're looking for. I mean,
it's funny because it's true.
He's done a good job of it.
Okay. Yeah, it really does sound like he's at the ha-ha hole or something.
Ted Turner says nobody likes America anymore, and it's all because of the president.
The damage was going to take years to repair. The damage, I mean, because only 8 years ago or 7 years ago, people loved us all over the world.
I don't know. Okay. There you go. That's Ted Turner. What does he do now? I mean, apart from going to low-rent award ceremonies.
He visits his accountant daily.
How much is Jane taking this week? There you go. Didn't Ted Turner, I mean, he really is sort of a lesson in the American way of business. Didn't he just start with one station, WTBS?
Yep, WTBS Atlanta.
I used to watch WTBS.
Which is now TBS Very Funny.
So he really did, man. That's a guy who, he really took one, his whole life, not unlike that of George Lucas, one big inverted pyramid where everything on earth with that guy is started with one tiny station that he parlayed into a huge media empire. And then he got to stick it to Jane Fonda for a while, and then now he's with, whatever. I like Ted Turner, though. I know a lot of people don't. I know my Mormon in-laws do not like Ted Turner, but I'm
Why
a big
is that?
Fan. Because like many people on that side of the political aisle, like their default, if they don't know, like if you haven't been on Fox News and if Bill O'Reilly has not embraced you warmly and given you a pat on the buttocks in public, they assume that you are a tool of the liberal media. Which he probably is. Ted Turner probably is it, too. He probably ran the liberal media. But I'm just, I mean, if CNN, I mean, and his association with CNN, too. But their default is that you're an enemy of the people, if they don't know who you are.
Well, longtime rap artist The Beastie Boys premiered the new movie in New York City last night. Band member Adam Horowitz says, awesome, I effing shot that.
was really an accident.
We didn't actually set out to make like a movie or anything. We were just playing a show, and then Yak had an idea that we were like, someone should videotape it. And literally, he took it, I guess, literally, like, get 50 video cameras, and then it just sort of happened.
All right, there you go. That's the flawless execution of the Metro News Desk, by the way, not to be confused with Tim Riley City Desk.
No.
Awesome, I effing shot that, by the way. I saw a trailer for it when I went to see V for Vendetta. They played a big, I'm surprised you didn't say it, they played a big trailer for it before the film.
They didn't show it in the suburbs.
It's the people in the suburbs are afraid of Rapid. I don't want any of those Beastie Boys out here. It's a film. It's kind of an interesting idea, actually, except that Bon Jovi did it like 20 years ago for the Bad Medicine video, where the Beastie Boys, they did this concert, and it was like at Madison Square Garden or, you know, something like that. And they gave video cameras to like 100 audience members or 150 audience members or what have you. And then the audience member, the deal was that you got to keep the camera as long as you gave them the film afterwards. And so then they turned over the... It's like horrible look that all bootleg videos have of a concert where there's, and you can spot a bootleg concert video because there's always some guy going nuts with the zoom in out feature. Mm-hmm. And where they're using all the cheap like $1.99 video effects that like, look, negative image. You know, it's like a guy who gets Photoshopped for the first time and suddenly everything has a swirl effect on it. That's what this movie looks like. It's like 145 minutes or something of amateur video footage of the Beastie Boys screaming on stage. I'm going to pass.
Meanwhile, Victor Willis, the original policeman in the 1970s disco band The Village People, pleaded guilty to drunk possession yesterday and giving false identification to a policeman.
Fantastic.
His arrest Sunday ended a five-month search with a former hitmaker. He's 54. He was pulled over by San Francisco police for a routine traffic stop, arrested after cocaine and drug paraphernalia was found in his car. The officer did not immediately recognize Willis. He wasn't dressed up as he was in YMCA.
Really? How would you? I mean, it's like that Felipe Rose guy.
You know who I am. I'm one of the Village People.
and what an embarrassing thing to have to claim. What an embarrassing card to have to pull.
Of course you are. This is San Francisco. Everyone's one of the Village People.
Well, imagine telling somebody in San Francisco you're one of the Village People.
Jesus Christ. I never really thought about that.
Seriously.
I mean,
it's not like you're being stopped in Akron.
You're the 12th one today. Get in the back. It's probably going to talk, you know, code 75, you know, another Village person.
Well, he co-wrote. He didn't write by himself. YMCA and in the Navy, but left the Village People in 1980.
Imagine that it took like four people to write one of those songs. But what an embarrassing card to have to pull, you know, like to try to get out of something. You know what I mean? Like you get pulled. I was at the Village People 27 years ago. And it's not going to work. And plus you're having, it's just the saddest of all possible, possible ways to try to get out of something. And Victor Willis, he was married. I mean, you talk about how the mighty have fallen. I mean, I know it's the Village People, but I mean, that guy, he is like a case study. I don't think they've ever done a behind the... They ought to do like little behind the music minis for like guys who don't really care about all that much, but who have just enough tragedy and disease in their life that it's worth talking about.
Yeah.
You know, like a, you know, behind the music that, you know, behind the music you only kind of care about or something. Because Victor Willis, he was married to Felicia Rashad at one point. And, you know, now it's like... pushing along a cart full of cans and occasionally getting arrested.
He was a little bit too old for Whitney Houston.
Yeah, we're going to get to that Whitney Houston story, too. That is, we're going to beat that drum like it's, we're going to talk relentlessly about Whitney Houston. Let's do one more, and then we'll break.
Okay.
And we'll come back here.
Gordon Leek, I believe his name is, a Republican candidate for governor here in Oregon, surprised state election workers when he paid his $100 filing fee in gold, handing over five gleaming $20 double eagles. His candidacy was rejected, however, when election officials were unable to deposit money into a bank. This is just too big a discrepancy between the cost of the filing fee and the actual cost of the gold coins, said Fred Neal, finance campaign manager.
I never understand the deal with gold coins. This is one of those things that I'd ask Lisa Goddard about if she ever comes back on the show. Because you always see that, like, this $1 gold coin sells for $85. I don't understand how that is the case. Because the mint, I watched this whole thing on the Discovery Channel about the mint the other day. Mm-hmm. And about the making of gold coins. But if they're always making, like, $1 and $5 and $10 gold coins. This is why we used to have somebody at OMSI. Our good friend Amanda used to work at OMSI, and she could explain this.
We have no more good friends there.
No, because the people at OMSI, well, they were not, she was nice. The rest of the people at OMSI were not especially gracious when it came to our entreaties that we could have a science person on
they
call.
They took advantage of our talents.
They used and exploited us.
Shipped our voices around the country and didn't even send us tickets to go see the show. Basically, is what it came down to.
It's true, because Sarah and Clyde and Tim, you guys all voiced their Moneyville exhibit.
Right, we're in this charming children's exhibit to delight youngsters throughout this country. And nobody had the courtesy to send us tickets to come see when it was here. So they packed it up and shipped it away before they sent us tickets. So right now, it is in Delaware somewhere.
Right now, Tim's voice is coming out of a cardboard toucan somewhere. Jesus. That's like Clyde, you know, Clyde to this day, Clyde says that he's got his voice is literally coming out of like, it's like a talking giraffe or something at a casino in Atlantic City.
Yeah.
And I'm like, did you ever get paid? No. You know, it's one of those deals. Yeah, so the Moneyville exhibit with you guys' voices. And before I tried to go see it and they tried to charge me at the door, I'm like, what are you talking about? We all did the voices for. They're like, $5, take it or leave it. And it is packed up. It's on a tour of the country. And the creepy
forever.
Thing is, I'm never going to come back. The creepy thing is, we'll all be dead, and it'll still be out there. The animatronic voice of Tim Riley will be telling people about, like, the gold reserve standard or something. Well, anyway, the point is, I don't understand anything about the currency. I don't even know what the debt is. Lisa Goddard, who claimed that she was going to make the debt sexy, failed to do that. She also failed to make it understandable. That's not really her fault so much as it is my fault for being dense. But they make all these coins, like, you know, the Reserve has made these $10 gold coins, but then they're always selling for, like, $100. And I thought they had to take money. I thought it's like if you were paying with a gold coin, thought they had to take it. Isn't that what it said? Like, this debt is legal or this is legal tender for whatever.
Well, if this fellow was elected governor, him like Oregon, the first state to return to a gold standard.
Oh, he's one of those guys.
Yes. We're going to take down all the stop signs. Everyone's on their own to stop at the gold.
Oh, he's one of, he's, you know what he is. He's one of those nutcase
libertarians.
One of those Harry Brown.
No, he's a Republican.
Oh, sure. Are they?
Well, he's a libertarian wannabe.
That's the thing. And the libertarians, who they're all just closet anarchists. Mm-hmm. You see those libertarians, and they're always coming from like a Star Trek convention somewhere.
Let them starve.
Completely. That's what it is. They're, libertarians are always on their way from a Star Trek convention, and they're on their way home to listen to Frank Zappa. That's how you can spot those guys. And it's a, whatever you do, my first 100 days in office, I will abolish every government agency, and we will fend for ourselves. And everybody's going to have a conk before they're allowed to speak to the group. All right. We're so goddamn behind. Okay.
Oh, that's all right. What are you going to do?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's 503-733-2970. Let's go ahead and go to a break here. It is the Rick Emerson Show. We thank you for coming by. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Here's what's on the way.
Corpse Watch.
We're going to do the Corpse Watch on the way. And by the way, this Corpse Watch contains the phrase, hoarding fetuses. Also, the top five bands ruined by a ballad. Later on, Mike Skolnick from the Faux Film Festival. And we're going to talk more about Sport Fight 15 featuring city versus suburbs and how you can participate in that. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show. We'll be back after this. Rick Emerson Show. Thank you for coming by. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming by, making a party listening day. It is the Rick Emerson Show. By the way, this email comes from our good friend Siegfried. I hope I could say that. Rick, just a side note about the pie eating. Clyde was eating pie even when we weren't shooting that night. Clyde was in the method. Uda Hagen? Well, whatever. Some Lee Strasberg type, but would be proud. We would be shooting your shots on the other side of the Hollywood Burger Bar, and there was Clyde still eating pie. So much pie. That's from Siegfried. There you go. And he's totally right that the craft services table, we totally sound like a-hole Hollywood actors, but the craft services table, everything eventually was gone. All the pie was gone. Everything fatty was gone. And it was just like a bunch of like
limp, in a pie.
like limp baby carrot sticks that no one wanted.
Who wants some lima beans? We want pie. No, lima beans.
That's fantastic. And of course, Clyde kept insisting that the pie was a prop and so we couldn't touch it. It's like, Clyde, can I survive? No, it's got a continuity. You know? All right. Rick, FYI, a libertarian is a Republican who likes to get high. That's true. I can see that. All right. Oh, now let's see. Now the Amanda who used to work at OMSI. Now she's calling to call us out on the OMSI Moneyville story. I think it's Tim largely who was complaining during the last segment that OMSI screwed us. Rick.
Who, me?
Amanda says, Rick, I gotta get control. I think there is that radon leak still happening in this room. Rick, thought I'd jog your memory to let you know that you and the crew were invited by me on several separate occasions to tour the Moneyville exhibit. Plus, you were offered a behind-the-scenes tour, but you stood me up. I'm not bitter by any means. Always remember you were appreciated by a select few at OMSI. Well, I don't know anything about that.
Let's move on.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, coming up later on this hour, we'll do the top five. Next hour, Mike Skolnick from the Faux Film Festival. I do want to note, by the way, for the record, God, this pie email. Can everybody who ever worked on the film shoot is emailing about
pie? That is the biggest memory of that film shoot.
Do you remember when Clyde ate all that pie? It really was like a no man can eat 50 eggs kind of a thing when we shot this movie Remote Control. Okay, I swear to God, this is the last film shoot observation I'm going to make, and then we'll get to this fetus hoarding news. And you never thought you'd hear that phrase coming out of your radio. Bada-bing! So we did this film shoot about 2 years ago in this diner, and Clyde's character was supposed to be eating pie. And Clyde's, even Clyde wasn't in character, he was eating pie. There was nothing but pie eating that night. Clyde probably ingested 400 pounds of pie. So we have now this email. This comes to us. This email comes to us from our good friend Aaron.
Hold me like you did by the lake on Naboo.
Geek in the City. Well, that's an unwieldy soundbite. Something like eating more than pie. Rick, I don't know if you remember, in addition to the pie, Clyde was also partaking in the mass quantities of rolled meats and free, and this is free in quotes, by the way, quote, free fountain drinks. This is because...
There was meat there?
The Holly...
Yeah, I didn't notice.
Well, you
it was
care.
Gone.
Yeah. Well, but the Hollywood Burger Bar, they were very nice. They left.
Yep.
And she was like, okay, shoot away. Just to put back anything you... Clyde, she's gone. Everything's free. Over to the fountain. By 3 a.m., we were all working stiffs. And all we had to eat were packets of Splenda and oyster crackers. So there you go. That's email from Aaron, Geek in the City.
Hold me like you did by the lake on Naboo.
I've got to make that somewhat shorter. Okay, so before we do the fetus hoarding news, which that never sounds normal, no matter how many times I said village person arrest, fetus hoarding news. I haven't even gotten to think about the cow today and Whitney Houston's bathroom. I mean, you can't turn out for a second. So let me read this now. This is actually now up at johnson970.com. This is up. It's posted. You can go there right now. It's got a fantastic logo, by the way. Our logo person. I don't say logo girl. Logo, but Bridget. It's got this cool kind of B-movie sort of kind of kitschy look to it. But it's City versus Suburbs. City versus Suburbs is a special amateur bout that Sportfight 15, or that the Sportfight guys, anyway, are going to be doing at Sportfight 15. It happens Saturday, April 8th, 8th in the Rose Garden. Sportfight is returning to the Rose Garden. Sportfight 15 tribute happens next Saturday. Matt the Law Lindland is going to be in the studio with us. Randy Couture is going to be in the studio. But they are doing something special. So in addition to all the regular battles, in addition to all the regular bouts, in addition to all the just the fantastic, I mean, it really is this the ultimate evolution of one-on-one combat, as they call it. In addition to all of the fantastic stuff and the fighting that you see at Sportfight, they are doing a special amateur bout city versus suburbs, and it's exactly what it sounds like. This is a local fight. They're going to be recruiting a guy to fight on behalf of the city, and they're going to be recruiting a guy to fight on behalf of the suburbs. They will get there into the ring. It's going to have the equipment. They're going to have the ref. They're going to have the whole thing. I think I'm probably going to end up doing the ring announcing for it, and these guys are going to battle it out. Here's where you come in. Sport Fight, the good people there, they want us. And by us, I mean us and you. They want the Rick Emerson Show listeners and audience, the Johnson 970 audience. They want us to help come up with the fighters. So we are looking for people to represent the city. And we are looking for people to represent the suburbs. If you don't know what Sport Fight's like, if you've never seen it, you don't know what it's all about, I have here the rules sheet that we're going to be going through here in just a short while. We will actually be going through the rules and regulations for Sport Fight. But it is, as they say, the ultimate evolution of one-on-one combat. It's basically just guys getting just beaten in the face and also putting the beat down on others. If you've really been living your whole life just wanting to give a guy like a whole bunch of fives, as the British say, right into the bridge of his nose, this could be your chance. But you will be not only fighting for yourself and your own personal honor, you will be fighting for the honor, for the pride, for the heart, the eye of the tiger of either the city or the suburbs. So if you want to, as they say, hold it down for the 503, or for whatever area code they have out there, like where Tim lives, this is your chance. Here's what you got to do right now. Go to Johnson970.com this instant, this moment. Don't wait another picosecond. Johnson970.com. Your chance to compete in the ultimate evolution of one-on-one combat. You click on the logo, you go there, and you could be representing Portland in the amateur bout at Sport Fight 15 at the Rose Garden. And this is your chance, fighting right there in the ring in front of thousands of people. So we are going to be talking more about it. We're going to be talking to people who are interested. And then next week, Matt Lindland is going to be here, and it all takes place next Saturday. So go check it out at Johnson970.com right now, city versus suburbs. Ladies and gentlemen, let's go to the city desk with your personal savior, Tim Riley.
All right, let's move along here to a grave watch.
Here's your grave watch for Wednesday, right here on the Rick Emerson Show. I think it's right there on the little hotkey. Right there. Do we have it?
Maybe the pot's not up.
Oh, try it again. Here's your grave watch for Wednesday.
There you go.
There we go. Things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of a love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone, taking a phone.
This comes to us, Dateline, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. A Pittsburgh area former funeral director who was in financial distress faces criminal charges of theft by deception and 19 counts of abuse of a corpse.
That's fantastic.
Boxes containing the remains of 19 babies and more than 300 fetuses were found in plastic containers in the garage of his former rental home.
Boxes of babies.
Winston had a contract with McGee Women's Hospital to transport fetal remains from the hospital to a crematory. Oh, this is grossing me out.
There's a whole...
I didn't read this before.
There's a whole series of unpleasant phrases, starting with fetal hoarding, boxes of babies, rental home. That's no picnic either, because somebody like you owns that place. A rental home implies that you don't own it, so...
Well, it probably wasn't a stipulation in the lease that there will be no box babies kept in this garage.
Well, you never think to add those little codicils to the... somewhere out there, there's a landlord who's in for a very unpleasant... You talk about trying to get, the cigarette smoke smell out of a house. Bada bing.
Well, apparently, this little activity paid him $9,000 from 1999 to early 2002.
Is there a market for boxes of babies?
Apparently so. By saving the remains, he didn't have to pay for cremation.
Oh, I see. Yeah. All right. That's okay. There you go. So that's sort of that's like when you pretend grandma's still alive so you can keep cashing the checks.
Now, the State Board of Funeral Directors fined him a grand total of $3,000 and suspended his license for 3 years, and he's since moved into public housing.
Doesn't that seem a little light to you?
Despite the criminal charges against Winston, defense lawyer John Elish said, quote, the issue is really about a breach of contract.
Not so much about boxes of babies and
contract law.
The hoarding of fetuses. I mean, my grandfather grew up in the Depression, so he hoarded a lot of soap, beef jerky. Yeah. Fetuses are way down on the list of things you would think that people hoard. But you know, what do I know? I'm kind of new to the hoarding business.
That is today's
there's your
grave watch.
There's your grave watch for thank you. Zooming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead.
do one more here, and then we'll take a break, and we'll come back with the top five.
A two-headed baby dies of infections. An Egyptian girl who survived an operation to remove a second head has died of a brain infection. Manor Magid, separate from a rare condition that occurs when an embryo splits in the womb and does not develop fully into a twin.
Oh, wait a minute. I got another story like this. We could actually make it a fetus threefer. Hold on. No, you just... So we've got... Swear to God, this program is so horrifying, even to me sometimes, and I got no standards at all. So we have the... We have the fetus hoarding and the boxes of babies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is what, a two-headed baby?
A two-headed baby,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. Now, I think, go ahead and read this. Now, I think I can make it a, I think I can complete the trifecta here. You just go ahead.
Her second head could smile and blink, but could not survive independently.
Oh, that's just wrong. That's unnerving.
Well, what does it have to worry about, really? Doctors in Cairo operated in February 2005 when she was just 10 months old. She died age 2 after being rushed to the hospital with a fever. This is known as craniopagus parasitis. A condition is one of the rarest forms in the world.
Okay. Let me read this. We'll finish the hat trick here. This is... I don't even know if I want to read this.
Oh, and... go ahead. Might as well. You've gone this far. Would you rather give away hockey tickets instead?
Okay. So I'll just give you a little heads up here.
Once you get rolling, it'll be fine.
it only feels dirty for the first few seconds.
Just read it, but don't listen to it.
I'm going to give you a little heads up. This is the worst thing you're going to hear today. And that's me saying
this.
Yeah. This is, and you really, when you think back in the last hour and 40 minutes, it seems like we've set the bar pretty high for such a statement. This is the final rock layer. This is as deep as the show could go. Oh, and it's from Islamabad.
What country is that?
It's in Pakistan, I think. Yeah, Pakistan. Surgeon, again, completing the fetus trifecta. You think you've got problems. Surgeons remove... two fetuses from infant.
From an infant.
Surgeons operated on a two-month-old Pakistani girl Tuesday to remove two fetuses that had somehow been discovered inside her. Abbasi, the chief doctor who led, I guess he's only got one name, led the operation to the case, was the first he was aware of what he calls... There's really not a lot of imagination. What he called fetus in fetus syndrome. That took a long time to come up with. He said this is extremely rare. And she comes from blah, 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 blah. Now, here's the weird thing about this. I have a friend of mine, and I don't think I mean, he doesn't hide. He actually has his name's Jason.
But
I
have a similar situation.
Friend of mine. He really did. A friend of mine. He runs, and I think this is public knowledge. I think I can say this. He runs this company. It's like a photography company. And the name of his company is, it's like Vanished Twin Photography.
Oh, yeah.
Vanished, you know Jason.
Yeah, he took my pictures.
He took the photo of me that's on the Johnson 970 website, as a matter of fact. Vanished Twin. And I swear to God, he'll tell you this if you get enough logger into him. It's called Vanished Twin because, I don't know how to describe this, because his mother was pregnant with him, and it's like one day there was him and another baby, next day, just him. And it's sort of that, you know, it's like when fetuses go wrong, if one of the fetuses just sort of, like we talked about how Fisher was absorbed by Intercom, same kind of a thing, but fetuses.
How was this explained to him, and how old was he when it occurred?
That's a good question, actually. I'd like to hear him tell the story in gruesome and graphic.
I mean, were people
detail,
gathered
right?
around the fireside in some holiday evening?
With a mug of cider. Did I ever tell you about the time you absorbed another fetus? Make that a new Rankin Bass special. Okay. John, just make that a new children's book. Jason has mysterious extra teeth. Let's take a break now. For the love of sweet Jesus. We'll be back after this. And this particular sleigh ride into the deepest fires of hell will continue. Coming up, top five bands ruined by a ballad. Later on, we'll talk more about Sport Fight 15, which is going to feature city versus suburbs. We're helping them look for fighters to represent. We'll talk more about that. And Mike Skolnick from the Faux Film Festival, plus Winterhawks tickets.
Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show. All right, so Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. Let's all get a hold of ourselves. Sweet slogan. Johnson Live 70, a proud part of the CBS radio family. See, here's the great thing about reading the three fetus stories like that, including hoarding, boxes of, vanished fetus. No matter what you hear for the rest of the day, it's all going to seem very it'll be like a salve. It'll be like a warm, cool compress on your forehead during a fever. It'll be like a cleansing sorbet. Dig the nasty fetus off your tongue. Figuratively speaking. Hey, it's 503-733-2970. It is the Rick Emerson Show. God help us all. You can email me like it's Rick at rickemerson.com. I'm still getting complaints about the quote Mexican story. See, now emails are split on whether he's saying management, businessmen, or minutemen. Let's listen one more time, shall we?
No, no, Gustav. We don't like what the businessmen do to us.
Yeah, I can't tell either. So he's saying something. He's complaining about Whitey. You know, and who, you know, really, who doesn't? Who isn't kept down by Whitey? I'm kept down by Whitey. It's 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, let's roll your top five, for Wednesday.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire.
Counting is wonderful, counting is marvelous, counting's the best thing to do.
La 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 la.
Counting is happiness, counting is ecstasy, I love to count.
Don't you? Ladies and gentlemen, here's Tim Riley at the City Desk with today's top five.
Okay, these are the top five bands ruined by a ballot.
Now, I'm going to give a little intro. Now, everybody out there knows what I'm talking about when I say top five bands ruined by a ballot. You know what I mean. You know the syndrome I'm talking about. You know exactly what I'm speaking of when I describe that. Now, here's the thing. There's nothing wrong with ballads as such. There's nothing inherently wrong with them. They're not, it's not like there's anything, you know, there's any, it's like there's any sin to record a ballad. But the problem is, when you are a rock band, a rock artist, and by the way, you will note that on this list, Eric Clapton's Wonderful Tonight is not on this list just because I can't take hearing the song ever again. I can't take it. Even putting it on the top five list is too much. You know, as the joke goes, slow hand should never really be that slow. But Wonderful Tonight is exactly... That is the archetype of what I'm talking about. He's Eric Clapton. He was in Cream. He was in Blind Faith. He was Derek and the Dominoes. He records Wonderful Tonight. Never did a good song again, ever. It broke the back of his career. It snapped his will to live. And so everything he did just sounded like a beer commercial or like a Hallmark card commercial. That's all of that and talking about his dead kid. That's it. That's all he ever did from then on. So
threw the baby out with the bathwater.
That was unnecessary.
Well, figuratively speaking.
It was Tim Riley who said that. Punch my ticket now. Anyway, but the problem is bands perform a ballad because it's an easy way to get on the radio and it's an easy way to get a crossover hit. But of course, once you record that ballad, then that's all you do from then on and your career begins to suck like a Kirby. You know what I'm talking about? So these are the top five bands and the ballads that ruined their careers.
With honorable mention, Motley Crue with Brandon.
Now, okay, this is...
You are the one, Brandon, my son.
Now,
you are the one.
This is why this is honorable mention. Because Motley Crue started to suck before this.
Your mother gave birth to you.
Okay, I gotta stop it.
The album cover, them posing nude, holding a baby.
the album has Dennis Pitzenbarger cupping Katie Holmes' distended stomach. Here's the thing you should never do when you're in a band. Never have kids. Because once you have kids, your ability to rock is forever gone. You can never
become a country singer if you do. Because that's it all your songs
well,
about.
Well, that's what Brett Michaels did. Because, every sing you recorded, you know, I got, you know, I was just in the bathroom. you know, taking care of a little nature business. And I'm listening to the couple. God love them. They keep us afloat. They bring in money. They're playing some song about, you know, you're my daughter and let me be your wings. You know, and you can't start doing that. You do that, your rock and roll career is over. Listen to the lyrics to this Motley Crue song, and I'm going to say them.
I don't think I can.
And this is, of course, sung by Tommy Lee. Tommy Lee should never sing anything, ever. I'm going to read you these lyrics, and then I want you to listen. Now, it's honorable mention because their career, they sucked before this. They started to suck like about 3 or 4 years before this song came out. I'm a big Motley Crue fan. But listen, imagine the time it must have taken Tommy Lee to write these lyrics. Forget me not, you're all I've got. It's like Moon in June. As you can see, you are the one, Brandon, my son. Wait for it. Your mother gave birth to you with love inside. She had candlelight and songs of life. And then this is really, he really just runs out of, like, the rhyming dictionary even fails him. Listen to this. Brandon, I love you. I love her. She is your mom.
Hickory dickory dock.
Okay. Now, let's hear these. Let's hear these performed.
Brandon, my son. You are the one.
This is Motley Crue. Home Sweet Home, Wild Side, Dr. Feelgood.
Your mother gave birth to you with love inside.
It makes me want to kill myself.
She had candlelight and songs of life.
Wait for her. I love you, I love you. She is your mom. Yeah, that's fantastic.
And then we walk hand in hand through the meadow, pledging a good book.
Drop that just a little bit. Thank you. All right. I can't take it anymore. All right, let's move on.
That was touching.
There you go. That's an honorable mention. We have like five more of these.
I know. Number five, Aerosmith. I don't want to miss a thing.
All right. Every moment spent. What else is there to say about this? And again, they're number five because they've really been doing this for about 15 years now, this one song. But this is the apotheosis. Oh, God. It's like injecting, like, Sambienol or something right into your head. This is the Boston Beantown Bad Boys. This is Steve. Really, the reason that this is on the list, this one song, this is emblematic of all the rest of the band's not even on this song. It's just Steven Tyler. It's just Steven Tyler and, like, an orchestra. The rest of Aerosmith isn't even on this.
This may have caused his mysterious illness.
Seriously, his body was rebelling. His own intestines came up through his throat and tried to throttle him. No more! His hips just... Maybe if we disintegrate now, he won't be able to sing it anymore. And this is, it's a kind of creepy video, too. Isn't it the video where he's, like, Liv Tyler's on the screen and he's, like, touching the screen? He's caressing her image on the screen?
Yeah.
And they are related. It's all very wrong. Talking about the top five bands ruined by a ballad.
And number four is Extreme, More Than Words.
Boy, great song, but you know they wish they'd never written this. This is the song Nuno Bettencourt wakes up in the middle of the night going, ah, it's More Than Words. And he's, you know, in a cold sweat, has to be calmed down by a nurse somewhere. Because the problem with it, this is another perfect example. The problem is you record this song. It's a big hit. And then the record company goes, More Than Words. We need another one of those. Can you write that? You know what I mean? It's they immediately want you to start cranking out just this song over and over and over again.
Well, let's call Barry Manilow. Maybe he can help you write it.
That's what... Well, and there's only two ways. To their credit, they chose the path less traveled.
Yes.
There's only two roads when you have something like this. You either never write a song like this again because you don't want to get pigeonholed. I mean, even Kiss resisted for like 10 years. They had Beth, and then they didn't do... Later, they started doing ballads, but even they knew that they couldn't start doing that with every album. Your fans turn on you like rabid weasels. Or you just start doing this song over and over again on every album. That's sort of the Goo Goo Dolls method. Where every album you have, like, well, what's this album's name? Well, it's the Ice on a Spoon, Black Balloon song, you know? The other problem with a song like this is you go to see Extreme, who are a really rockin' band. And I know that sounds cheesy, but I mean, they were really great, really an intense band. But then it's just nothing but housewives waiting for this song. And the housewives go and they hate everything else the band is playing. you go and you hate the Housewives, it, no one wins. It's a lose-lose scenario.
At number three, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Under the Bridge.
I want to note, I've never liked the Red Hot Chili Peppers, ever. I hated them, as the kids say, back in the day. But, I mean, I always kind of respected them. They kind of did what they did, and they sort of had the funk metal going on. And
this just makes living in L.A. a little bit worse than it has to be. I remember when this came out, things just weren't going very well.
And there was
part of the problem.
And that's always the worst part. When you're living in a city that has some sort of lyrical reference in a song, and it's a song you had, like in Salt Lake, I had to hear Missionary Man by the Eurythmics like every 10 minutes on the radio. And just like in... Like in Portland, or in Spokane, rather, there's like some Steve Miller song somewhere where he references Spokane, or some live version where he goes like, Spokane! It's like you had to play it like every hour on the hour. But I mean, they were always at least kind of a, you know, kind of a, again, a sort of a heavy band. They were a rock band. And listen to this. After this song, it just became this over and over again. It was this, and then it was Soul to Squeeze, and then it was Californication, and then it was Scar. They're all just this song. Not a good song. God, I could shoot this guy in the face and not feel bad about it for half a second. Anthony Kiedis, I could kick him down a hill and do a latrine and then set it on fire, and I wouldn't feel bad for it. I'd forget it by the time I walk back to my car. Oh, I hate this song. Talking about the five biggest bands ruined by a ballad.
Number two, Metallica, Nothing Else Matters.
This is when it all started to go bad. This was the... listen, if you, in the background, you can hear the shark. And... There you go. You hear Henry Winkler jumping over it.
Is this Scarborough Fair? Somebody got Funkle?
There really ought, somebody ought to match that up. It really does sound like Scarborough Fair. I never really thought about that. This is a Metallica. It's a James Hetfield. Rock and roll fiery fist of metal doom. Listen to this. You can tell he was married, by the way, because only a wife can really do this to you when you're a rock singer. Only having a wife and children can reduce James Hetfield to like a slightly more menacing James Taylor. This makes me want to shove my face into a buzzsaw. Open mind for a different view. I remember sitting there, I talked about this in Bigger Than Jesus, with this CD, listening to it over and over again, trying to convince myself it would become good somehow. It's that whole, like, if I listen to it over and over, maybe it'll be great. It's like how they say that battered women can learn to enjoy the abuse. They can learn to tolerate it, accept it as normal. I remember listening to this over and over again. No, it'll all make sense. It'll... Like, listening to the song like I was looking at one of those magic eye paintings, hoping that eventually it would come into focus. And I realized, no, it's just terrible. We're talking about the top five biggest musical acts ruined by a ballad.
And at long last, we reach number one. Here's Stevie Wonder, Just Called to Say I Love You.
The biggest proof that this is number one is you can't even tell who this is. Right here, you said 86. You can't even tell. Let's listen to that musical opening again. This is... Oh, wait, no. Oh, that's my fault. Wait, here we go. This could be Party All the Time. This could be any number of Whitney Houston songs. This could be the Jets. Stevie Wonder. Hello, ye fell. Stevie Wonder, the man, he was superstitious. The Master Blaster. Uptight, everything's all right. Fingertips, part two.
How do you want me to sing this again?
No first of free. Maybe when they handed it to him. No, there was some blindness. I was, maybe he couldn't see how bad the song was.
That's something that pushed you to.
No, it's too. Just another ordinary day. It's like the, you know what it is? It's like having melted butter. Not even butter. It's like having melted oleo just slowly dribbled into your ears while someone's kicking you in the junk over and over again. No wedding Saturday. I'm sorry, I slipped into a coma there for a second.
Just call to say this will play on adult contemporary stations forever.
All right.
That's enough.
I can't take any more. We're going to take a break. We'll just take this music to break. We're going to thank our good friend Kirk Myers. Sarah had to step out for a moment, take care of some business. So Kirk, our good friend Kirk Myers is suffering through this music. Taking six for the team today. Listen to this.
I love everybody sing. Oh, the bouncing ball.
It sickens me. I just called to say... Okay, back after this, coming up this hour, Mike Skolnick from the Faux Film Festival. By the way, right now, we're going to take caller numbers 9 and 10. Callers number 9 and 10, you win a pair of tickets to see. It just doesn't even, hockey and this song don't even go together. Callers number 9 and 10 at 503-733-2970. You win a pair of tickets to see the Winterhawks play Seattle later on in the week. Don't go anywhere. The Rick Emerson Show continues after this.
No warm July, no hot.